In this episode, Tony Blackburn pays tribute to Ed Stewart and to David Bowie. Steve Bobrick tells us about what might have been the greatest radio OB ever. We've got news, we've got David Lloyd's radio moments, everything in fact, from Major Tom to Major Tim.
The Radio Today programme, with broadcast by Onyx, creators of Phonebox and Oasis. Welcome to the Social Studio.
And to help us celebrate the life of Ed Stewbot Stewart, I'm delighted to say that we're joined on the line by Tony Blackburn. Tony, when did you first meet Ed Stewart?
Well, Trevor, it was I was on Radio Caroline in 1964 for 2 years. Then I joined Big L Radio London, and that's the first time I met Ed on board Big L, 1966. And a lot of people were on there, like Dave Cash and Kenny Everett, and it was great fun out there.
I got the impression as a listener in those days that Ed was something of a school prefect. He was a tiny bit older than the rest of you, wasn't he?
He was. Well, he's a couple of years older than I was. So I was 21 when I joined, so he'd been 22, 23. He'd come from Radio Hong Kong. And I think, yes, he was a little bit more like a school prefect.
He had that voice, didn't he, that he later used very much as a BBC announcer figure, very rich, very, in a sense, old school, I guess.
Yes, he was. He was very old school, really, for if you listen to him on the pirate radio ships. I mean, he was one of his main love, I remember out there, were the Bachelors, which was strange because, I mean, it was the time of the Rolling Stones and the Beatles, but Ed would insist he loved the Bachelors. He loved playing the Bachelors music.
One of the things I remember was he used to do a spot for schools, didn't he? Do you remember the school spot?
Yes.
That was, I think, where all that Hello, Darling started.
Yes, I don't know where that came from, the Hello, Darling. That was, it became his catchphrase, and he was after a younger audience. He went for a younger audience, but at the same time, his musical taste was not quite as trendy as the rest of us, I think. And you're quite right, he was slightly schoolmasterish. And strangely enough, he was a person that he was great fun to be with, and he had a terrific reputation of never paying a bill and being terribly mean. And he played on this quite considerably. He wasn't really like that. He was actually quite generous. But he would quite often, we'd be out together, about two or three of us, we'd been out, and the bill would come, and he said, well, you won't expect me to pay. And so he never did. And we worked it out the other day that over the years, he must have saved a fortune.
So when you all turned up at Radio 1, I mean, you'd been there for a few weeks, hadn't you, doing programmes on the Light programme, but when the rest of you all got back together, how did he feel, do you think, about taking over Junior Choice?
Well, I don't know. The strange thing was that Ed was there at weekends, and I was, of course, doing the breakfast show Monday to Friday, so I didn't really see much of him. It wasn't like the Pirate Ships Radio 1, where we were all living together on the pirate ships, and so you'd see the same person every day. It was like being in a floating hotel. But Radio 1, you did your programs, and then you went out and did something else. So Ed, really, apart from the meetings that we went to and events that happened, like the Radio 1 days out, really didn't see a great deal of him.
Because you took over Junior Choice, didn't you, from him? And my impression always was that you felt slightly put out by that, because it was kind of hard to be a cutting-edge DJ playing all the Astates and the White Labels, wasn't it, if you were actually playing Nelly the Elephant? But Ed didn't seem to mind that.
No, I mean, I did take over eventually from Ed, which I didn't enjoy for two reasons, really. First of all, I'd been doing daily shows, you know, the breakfast show, then you got put on the mid-morning show, then the afternoon show, and you think, oh my God, where are we going from here? And oh, darn, it's Junior Choice, which actually I took over from Ed, and I didn't want to do that because I didn't understand why they did that, because Ed was particularly good on the program. I never did it as well because my heart really wasn't quite in it. I mean, I did my best, and I was working with Keith Chegwin and Maggie Philbin. But I thought Ed Stewpot's, Junior Choice was the one that was the best, really, if I'm honest about it. And I, as you quite rightfully say, Trevor, I didn't really enjoy Nelly the Elephant as much as Ed did.
I got the impression that the listeners, the young people, actually wanted to hear, I don't know whether it was Bucks Fizz or the Police or something, but you were having to say, and here's what Mummy and Daddy want you to hear.
Well, that was it. You're absolutely right. Bang on the nail on that one. I think the problem was we did get the cards in from the grannies and granddads and the mums and dads, and requesting Nelly the Elephant and Sparky and the Talking Piano and things like that, whereas the kids did actually want the pop music of the time, which, of course, when I was doing it, was tended to be Bucks Fizz. And that was the music I wanted to play, but we couldn't, because we couldn't update the program, because we got all these cards in wanting children's songs. And, of course, it was the time when really kids now were into the charts.
Now, when Ed disappeared from the BBC, as everyone inexorably does, he went off to commercial radio. Did you see much of him after that?
Not really, no. Very, very rarely. You know, once you go to the dark side, it's as I do as well. But no, I didn't see much of Ed. And so the last time I saw him, actually, I mean, last time I saw him was in Zurich, when a lot of us went out there for, it was a 3-week sort of music convention. We were only there for about 4 or 5 days, but Ed was there with people like Roscoe and Tony Prince and all the rest of it, and Paul Burnett, and we had a lovely time. And it was the first time, really, I got to know Ed. Apart from when I'd been on the pirate ships with him. And I did find that, you know, as he got older, he wasn't the schoolmasterish figure anymore. He was a lot of fun. And I really enjoyed that trip with Ed. It was great. And we had long chats together, and it was a really nice time. So that's my sort of remaining, that's the last time really I saw Ed. And I used to see him now and then when we went to premieres, you know, at the theatre and things like that. He'd sometimes be there. But of course, he'd moved down to Bournemouth at this time.
Where do you think he'll be remembered in the great pantheon of that generation of broadcasters?
Well, I think, of course, you know, on television, he had a lot of success with Crackerjack.
Hey!
And he loved doing that show. But I think on radio, it, of course, will be Junior Choice. You know, that's what he'll be remembered for. And, of course, more recently, he was on Radio 2 at Christmas time. And he used to come back every year and do that program, which I know the listeners love, because on Twitter and Facebook and everything, they said that they loved him doing that show. So I think he'll be remembered for Crackerjack and Junior Choice, which I feel he did very, very well.
Tony, thank you for talking about Ed. It would be remiss of me, I think, though, while I've got you, not to ask you about David Bowie. I think most of the recollections and obituaries of Bowie this week have been about the 70s and 80s. But I would imagine that you probably met David Bowie in the very early days of his career, didn't you?
Well, I did, yes. I met him for the very first time down in Mayfair, you know, in the days in the early late 60s and early 70s. Record companies had lunches to launch their artists every single day. You know, it wasn't run by the accountants as it is now. And there seemed to be money flying around all over the place. And I remember going to Mayfair, and it was to, I don't know, it wasn't to launch David Bowie, but there was a record that one of his that came out, and we were all waiting to see if it got in the charts. And I was chatting to David, a lovely guy and a very shy man in a strange sort of way. And we found out that his record had gone straight in the top 10, and we all had a glass of champagne to celebrate it. And that's my main memory of David Bowie, apart from being on stage. And you know, I thought he's a marvellous artist. He's one of those people that, I mean, some of the music that he presented, I like very much, you know, things like Space Oddity and Let's Dance and things like that. You know, one or two of the things it didn't really appeal to me that much, but I thought rather like Freddie Mercury and Mick Jagger, David Bowie was fantastic on stage. And the way he changed his image the whole time, you know, we went through the Ziggy Stardust stage, and I thought he was marvellous.
Well, thanks for coming on the Radio Today programme, Tony. Just one thing. Are you going to this radio reunion event at the weekend?
Well, unfortunately, I'm not, because I'm working from 9 in the morning. I'm on 5 radio stations on Sunday. 2 of them are recorded and 3 of them are live. So I start at 9 o'clock and I finish at 7 in the evening. And I gather the event's finishing at 8. So I think by the time I got there, it would all be over anyway.
You do know that's an insane workload for a gentleman who won't see 65 again, don't you?
Yeah, at the end of this month, Trevor, I'm 73. So
there you go. tell us which stations you're on then on a Sunday.
Well, I'm very lucky, you know, very lucky to be working all these stations. Radio 2, of course. It took me 30 years to get there, but eventually I got there and doing this marvellous programme, Pick of the Pops, which I absolutely adore doing. So I'm on Radio 2, Pick of the Pops. I do KMFM in Kent. I do ABC. Well, what used to be called Magic in the North now is I go under the Greatest Hits, and I'm on there in the North and Scotland. BBC Three Counties Radio. I do BBC Berkshire and, of course, BBC Radio London as well. So I'm pretty busy, which is lovely. You know, it's the way I like it.
There must be some younger broadcasters listening to this thinking, for God's sake, man, give us a chance.
Well, the last person to say that was Pat Sharp, actually, who invited me out to, you know, we go out and have a cup of coffee now and then. And he said, for God's sake, when are you going to retire and give us young guys a chance? And I just said, no chance whatsoever, Pat. I never want to retire. And he said, I thought so.
Well, I wish you many more good years. Thanks for coming on the podcast today, Tony, and good luck.
Absolute pleasure, Trevor. Thank you very much.
That was Tony Blackburn. We'll find out about the arguably the greatest radio OB of all time in a minute after the news from Roy.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
As you've been hearing, Ed Stewart has sadly passed away just a few days after suffering a stroke. Thousands of people have paid tribute online, some of which you can read in this week's edition of eRadio. Bauer has confirmed that Neil Fox will not be returning to work at the company, saying his contract has expired and he won't be back on the Magic Breakfast Show. He's been off air since he was arrested in September 2014. And finally, the Arkivas and the New York Festivals 2016 are now open for your entry. If you'd like to submit your best bits, you can find all the links you need on our website. That's the very latest from radiotoday.co.uk. I'm Roy Martin.
Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis, offer you elegantly integrated products and intelligent one-stop shopping for all your studio needs. Discover a full range of innovative studio products. Play out by Wide Orbit, Music Master Scheduling, Stirlitz, Newsboss, Larvo, Telos, Axia, Omnia, Digigram and Commotion. Visit bionics.co.uk today.
It's the Radio Today programme. I'm Trevor Dan. Thank you, Roy. Thank you, Broadcast Bionics. Let's have some new ads soon. Hey, guys. I promised you some talk about the greatest radio OB of all time. To help us consider whether this project was, Steve Bobrick's on the line. Steve's a social media editor for BBC Radio. And Steve, you were on a train, weren't you? You'd got a smartphone, you had got some earbuds in your head, and you were listening to a radio OB that was coming from literally thousands of miles away in space. Tell us the story.
Well, it really was remarkable, Trevor, because I was on the train using these devices that we've all got completely accustomed to now, on the end of an internet connection while rumbling through Hertfordshire. I was listening to community radio station Radio Verulam, which is local to me in Hertfordshire, and they're in St Albans. Because it doesn't really matter where you are anymore. It doesn't matter that they're local to me or not. You can listen to Radio Verulam anywhere. I happen to be using the UK Radio Player app to do it. But what had happened is that I'd heard that the bright gang at Sandringham Secondary School in St Albans had got themselves the first link up with astronaut Tim Peake, who's, as everybody knows, I think the Brit on the space station at the moment. And so they were the first school in Britain to get a radio hookup arranged with him. And of course, the Radio Verulam had jumped on this and turned it into an OB. So I found myself on the end of this extraordinary audio chain that began 400 kilometers up in space and proceeded via the amateur radio link to Sandringham School and Verulam's radio car and the link back to their studio, and then via the internet to me on this train.
what could possibly go wrong? Actually, something did go wrong right at the beginning, didn't it?
Well, first of all, one of the pupils at Sandringham had gone to the trouble of getting her amateur radio qualification. So she had a license to do this. Of course, they needed this because those rules are very strict, aren't they? Mm. So she was the ground end of an amateur radio link with the space station. And as the space station came into view, quite literally, over Iceland, she began to hail the station using those, you know, those protocols we recognize from amateur radio. But she was on the wrong frequency. It was very, very noisy. There was lots and lots of static. So actually, Tim Peake suggested that she switch to their, you know, they'd planned things. So they switched to their pre-assigned backup frequency. And that was clear as a bell. And it was lovely.
It is a fantastic story, isn't it? When we think of all the OBs we've been involved with in our lives that have gone hideously wrong, you know, where we've tried to do an outside broadcast from a school, you know, 3 miles from the studio and we can't get a signal. And there they are, as you said, hundreds of kilometres up in space. And there's old Tim Peake saying, tell you what, love, why don't you just, you know, change the frequency on that? That is, you know, a really magical radio story.
There was something in it about the collision of the very local, it was a St. Albans Secondary School, the natural constituency of this brilliant community station, Radio Verulam, and the utterly intergalactic almost, you know, these astronauts whizzing by up there, who it occurs to me must also be qualified amateur radio ops, mustn't they? Otherwise they wouldn't be allowed to be the top end of the link, would they?
It set me thinking, in light of your role in social media and lots of the people that I follow on Twitter who were very excited about all this, it set me thinking about the options and opportunities for the future that perhaps we don't do enough. You know, when you listen to the just ordinary, I don't know, I mean, Radio 4 is a good example, where lines drop out all the time, don't they? And, you know, too often, really. And yet we can, there you are on your smartphone listening to a man in space. You know, where are we going in this world? You know, can we get better at all this? Should we be a bit more imaginative, do you think, about the voices and the sounds that we can bring onto our radio station?
Oh, I really think so. And actually, of course, you can't get through an episode of the Today programme now without, you know, the line dropping to here or to there. And of course, listeners get very impatient with this, don't they? But the thing that you always really want to remind them, if you could remind them individually, you want to remind them that there are so many, you know, one of those 3-hour episodes, so many different links are made via so many different technologies. There's so many different locations and devices that we'd never have dreamt of that kind of complexity some years ago. So actually, with the extra richness that we get into these shows now comes the risk that we're going to lose a line occasionally. And what was brilliant about this one the other day with the OB with the space station was that there was a real kind of tin can and string vibe there, you know. There was a real hooking together radio links in a very kind of, you know, kind of hopeful, kind of thumbs up sort of way, you know.
I'm quite interested in the lines going down issue that you were just talking about. Because, of course, one reason is that perhaps we're more ambitious than we need to be, you know. I mean, Radio 4 Today programme and so on, they hate having anybody on the telephone, don't they? You know, it's as though you've sort of given up if they're on the phone. But if you can put them on Skype or something else, which might be more likely to go down, somehow that's a better choice.
Yeah, I mean, it won't surprise you to learn that I'm all in favour of this. These radio programs, whether they're news or not, whatever they sit in the schedule, they're competing across the board with media that's changing so quickly and is so rich that the idea that you might kind of pull back from these experiments and try and be a bit more back to basics about it is really nutty. And I think we should keep pushing with these things. Obviously, if it descends into incoherence and we lose our you know, you lose the shape of the show because these things fail, and that's disastrous. But on the whole, I think we're really enriching what we do like this.
Do you think, this is a very broad question, but I know you're interested in all things digital and in, you know, the way that people use radio and use other media to bounce off radio and within radio and so on. I was talking to somebody at a university today who was saying that they've started to teach journalism in a completely platform neutral way now, that they're not saying this is print, this is radio, this is online, this is TV. They just say this is finding stories and reporting them across a range of media. From your perspective, sitting there in what we still call social media, and I wonder for how long we're going to, because we might just call it media before long. It seems like an obvious question, but is that the way it's all going?
It really is. It really is. And we find, and actually this is really not, this is not driven by a bunch of kind of evangelists or by the technology. It's actually driven by the audience. And if you spend any degree of time as I do in social media, then what you'll find is, you know, quite quickly you learn that the audience has got no interest at all in the backstory to this piece of content that you're presenting. They're typically not bothered that it originated on a radio show or in a print newspaper. They're just interested in what it contains and what it means to them, what it makes them feel. And we're still hung up on these origin stories and on, you know, where we present our content and on the hierarchy that that implies. But the audience really is way past that. Or at least, I suppose, the kind of younger end of it, the switched on end of it, the under, and I'm going to be generous, I'm going to say the under 45s, the under 50s, I mean, that end of the audience.
It's a big challenge, though, isn't it, for everybody? Because we still hear radio stations and groups say, well, it's important that our brand gets mentioned in social network. And we, you know, people do their breakfast show and then they tweet what they've been doing and then they send photographs of themselves winding down and so on, as though that's the way to do it. And I wonder if before long it'll be a question of, look, what you do online is where the meat, you know, the centre of your brand is, and you might have a radio station, a radio show that kind of goes along with it.
Yes. This business, this, let's call it an obsession with, in media, it tends to be called attribution. This business with making sure that we label everything and that our audiences know which brand created the content, where it came from, how it got to us, and who ultimately, I suppose, is funding it and designing it and so on. That's not going away. Publishers, media owners, broadcasters are going to retain an interest in their audiences knowing where this stuff comes from and who it belongs to. But you're absolutely right in saying that, you know, the audience is now, let's use this word, the audience is now curating a kind of feed of content for themselves daily, which might come from 20 or 30 sources and not the kind of 3 or 5 that it might have done in the past. And of course, that weakens our sense of the brand and of the and of ownership and so on.
Well, on that positive note, Steve Bobrick, thank you so much for joining us on the Radio Today programme. It's lovely to have you. Yeah, that's your first time, I think, isn't it?
It is.
Long-term listener, first-time caller, all that stuff. Thank you, Steve. I'll talk to you again soon. That was Steve Bobrick from BBC Radio, social media editor. From the future, let's go to David Lloyd and the past. Here's this week's Radio Moments. 100 years of radio.
Radio Moments. We start this week with a tribute to someone who became a key influence to both Noel Edmonds and Kenny Everett.
By the way, was that fanfare for me?
Sure.
Oh, good. I'll take it to the bank tomorrow and cash it. Oh, I beg your pardon, madam. Excuse me.
Yes.
You see, my name is Jack Jackson.
The first influence was Jack Jackson, because he was the first guy who actually had fun on the radio. Because all the rest of them were sort of, we better behave because we're in Broadcasting House and Lord Reith might drop a brick on us any second, because he was rather severe. But Jack Jackson had a studio in the Canary Islands, so he was free from all this collar and tie stuff.
Kenny on Jack Jackson, who died this week 38 years ago. Jack was an accomplished trumpeter, bandleader and broadcaster. He was one of the first to use produced comedy material within a music show. He hosted programmes on Radio Luxembourg, The Light Programme and Radio 2.
Now, just a minute.
No, now, just a minute. We can't talk, we're in conference.
Who was that?
I don't know, we can't talk, we're in conference.
Now you listen to me, Mr. Big Pushy. This is my program, my studio, my interviews and my questions.
My, my.
Jack Jackson. 1982 now, and this week a new presenter for that hallowed Sunday evening BBC chart show.
275, 285, and stereo VHF.
And welcome to listeners on VHF who've just joined Radio 1, not only for the top 40, but also for the rest of the evening as well. Don't forget you can hear the nation's top chart show in super stereo on VHF.
Tommy Vance, this week's top 40.
And this is the Top 40 as compiled for the BBC by the British Market Research Bureau. Hi.
Tommy Vance and his first BBC chart this week 34 years ago. Big of the Pops remains a key BBC programme fixture, and it's 60 years ago this week that Alan Dell took on the show.
Let us just point out here that we over here have produced our own indigenous rock and roll with instinctive humour, indeed. May we bring you, and to your attention, if you've not already heard it, this record by Gail Warning and the Weathermen of Met Rock.
Alan Dell, who began on Pick of the Pops this week in 1956, and Alan was one of John Peel's favourite presenters. Happy birthday now to a chap who celebrates his 83rd birthday, and I suspect there are not many 83-year-olds still doing mid-mornings on Capital.
Well, I don't know the original recording date of that one, but it's a year or two old, the Mills Brothers and Opus 1. So, Katie, we've discussed this grueling exercise for the thighs. You said there was another part of the body, the upper body. What's
the
that?
Upper body, that's the flab underneath the upper arm.
Oh, yes, a kind of dewlap when the arm is raised and
yes,
it swings free.
Especially with men or women.
Yeah, the most frightening thing about starting at Capital Radio was that I'd never had to do any self-op before, never had to work the machinery, always sat behind a glass and waved a languid finger at the BBC and someone else put on the records, put on the tapes, switched on the microphones and everything else.
Happy birthday, Michael Aspel, born this week in 1933. He was 40 when he began his 10-year spell at Capital Radio. And staying with Capital, its transmitters were turned on this week in 1973.
We're transmitting on a frequency of 557 kilohertz, 539 metres in the medium wave band. And these special tests are to help us plan independent local radio stations for London.
Testing underway on the temporary Capital wavelength 539 AM, on which Capital launched before moving to 194. Its FM frequency has stayed the same forever, though. 13 years ago this week, a new voice on Breakfast in Yorkshire on Galaxy 105.
Ah, dear me, dear me, dear me. Good morning, it's 6.02, number one for dance and R&B. This is Galaxy 105. Good morning from Hursty. This is brand new to Galaxy 105. This is your new breakfast show. This is Hursty's Daily Dose. I'm Hursty. Hi, she's Jojo.
I'm still here, guys.
The first Hursty's Daily Dose on Galaxy in Yorkshire. Since then, both the station and Hursty have changed. And another new breakfast show, this time for Radio 2, this week 6 years ago.
BBC Radio 2.
Yes, thank you to everyone before us. And now what's going to happen?
We have no idea.
The Chris Evans Show.
We do have some idea, but it's busy, you see.
I don't think it's going to be a tough gig. I mean, I'm going to have to take it very seriously, you know, from a pre-planning point of view. I mean, it's a huge thing to take over, but it's what I do for a living. It's not like I'm being asked to play football for England tomorrow night. This is what I do, and I have been doing it for ages. It's like changing, you know, it's like driving for Renault and then being asked to drive for Ferrari. Well, that's what I do. They are big shoes to fill, And I think I'll be fine, to be honest.
Chris Evans, who hosted his first BBC Radio 2 breakfast show this week in 2010. This week in 1927 saw the first ever running sports commentary on BBC Radio. It was a rugby international match, England versus Wales. The commentator, Teddy Wakelam.
Well, the first half has been about as exciting as anyone could wish for. Oh, I can't go that. England have it. I think it's Tucker. He's got past Andrews and he's up to the 25. He kicked across. The English back are up. The Turnbull's there. Oh, well done, sir.
square two.
Saves an awkward situation, Ned.
Rugby union player turned commentator Teddy Wakelam on the first commentary this week, 89 years ago. The second voice, of course, was calling out the numbered squares, which corresponded with a diagram in the Radio Times, so you really could picture every move of those matches. So, with one word, the book's DAB channel closing 8 years ago.
OK, John, well, maybe it's time to have the first reading from the Rule of Claw.
WABC launching on AM in the Black Country 27 years ago.
WABC, radio nice and easy.
A new smooth radio breakfast show across the UK with Simon Bates 5 years ago.
And it's easy to criticise, and heaven knows we all do.
Steve Wright beginning his 15 months on Radio 1 Breakfast 22 years ago.
You're looking good.
The death of BBC Radio Nottingham's Dennis McCarthy 20 years ago.
Ring us throughout the afternoon on Nottingham 44444 and we'll ring you back just after 4 o'clock when we have Where Are You Now?
And the first ever play written for radio this week 92 years ago.
We shall suffocate or starve or both, my dear.
Those are this week's
Radio.
Thank you, David Lloyd. Credits also this week to Tony Blackburn, Steve Bobrick, Roy Martin, and, of course, you for listening. Our researcher is Hayley Hayes, and the Radio Today programme is a TDC production. See you all next week.
The Radio Today programme, with broadcast by Onyx.